Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Brad Coates, hey, Brad, is back.
Hey, Diana. Aloha, listeners.
Yes, those of you who listen to the show know that Brad is a frequent guest, and he lives in Hawaii. And I used to live there, and we began our friendship, 20 years ago. And so Brad is back. I'm so glad we're going to talk about the differing dating and mating, marriage and divorce, sex and romance habits of the different generations, boomers, millennials, and Gen X. Because Brad puts on his sociological hat, and he does a lot of investigations from a sociological point of view and updates his book, Divorce with Decency, all the time. It's now in its fifth edition. Really great book.
Yep,
number five. So we're going to start. Well, Brad, let me just check in with you. We check in with each other on email, and we're going to see each other in about 2 weeks when Brian, my husband, and I go to Hawaii. And I'm really looking forward to that.
As am I, Diana. It's always great to see you.
Thank you.
Talking with you on your show is fun, but you're even more fun in person.
Thank you. You too. Lots of fun. And we always laugh a lot, and that's good for any relationship. And one of the things we're going to touch on today is how the smartphone and other digital devices are making partners less willing to disclose even deep feelings and less understanding of each other. There have been some studies that have shown that. But let's start officially with baby boomers and marriage and divorce. But do tell the listeners first, Brad, you know, how long you've been doing this work and even why you decided on Hawaii. I don't think you've told that on the air.
I've been a divorce lawyer. I've run the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii, a firm called Coates and Frye, and it's been the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii for, God, 4 decades now. I've been here since the late 70s, originally out of Southern California, and I just sort of followed the advice to go west, young man, and found myself in Hawaii, and then found myself being the designated divorce lawyer in a big law firm. So I've been doing literally thousands of divorces for 4 decades now, and after about the 5,000th divorce or whatever I'd done, I've probably done 7,000 or 8,000 divorces personally, and my firm's probably done closer to 35,000. It's crazy. It's an interesting thing to have made your life's work, but after a while, I got more interested in trying to figure out the sociology and the dynamics and the personalities and the psychology behind, you know, what causes people to go in and out of relationships. And that's what's in a lot of my books, Divorce with Decency. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of how I wound up in this field. It's actually a lot more interesting to try and figure out what the cause of divorces is than it is to just do a meat axe down the middle property settlement kind of thing. So I've found it pretty fascinating, really.
Yes, and I know you've talked on that subject on cruise ships in the past. And one time, a long time ago, my mother and her husband were in the audience. And
I remember
she introduced
that, yes.
Yeah. My mother was very lively, and I miss her. She's been gone about 2 years. But she had a long life. 95 is good. And she, like her mother, remained sexual well into their late 80s and 90s, early 90s.
And like her daughter is bound to do, yes.
Oh, bound to do, absolutely. Runs in the family. Isn't that a nice thing to have run in the family?
I can't think of a better character trait.
Yes, a lusty lady is nice to have around. Because I'm so sexually satisfied, I really have a great sexual relationship with my husband. You know, I'm often in a good mood because of it, and I'm healthier because of it.
You know what's interesting,
yes.
And this gets us into what we're supposed to be talking about. You know, there's no question about what sex makes for better relationships. It's one of the big causes of divorce is a failed sexual relationship or a lack of adequate or enough sex in a relationship. That's one of the big, alongside with money and family and a couple of other primary movers in divorce cases. Lack of sex is a biggie.
It's a biggie.
And plentiful sex is the reverse of that barometer. It makes you happier. It cements your relationships. It's a good thing to have going. And what's weird is that as the generations pass, we're finding that the baby boomers, which is the generation that you and I would belong to, Diana, used to have and still do have probably more sex than the succeeding generation of the millennials or the Z generation, the millennials in particular are dangerously in danger of being undersexed. And that will probably trickle over to their relationships.
It is fascinating. And but the baby boomers back in the 60s, it was all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
And rock and roll. We know that mantra, don't we?
We sure do. And boy, I had a lot of fun. I mean, one of the things you say is that baby boomers, especially in their 20s, and I was single through all of my 20s, so I was one of those women who had more recreational sex and more sex partners. And I'm so glad I did, because it helped form who I am and it helped inform my sexuality. And I've remained sexual because I know how important it is. But isn't that true of baby boomers? We finally had the birth control pill, and it's full steam ahead.
The birth control pill was obviously what kicked it off, and I think it was 1963, 1964. That made
That's
it
right.
safe for women to have to engage in sex without having to anticipate a pregnancy, and a baby the next 9 months later. So that mm-hmm. definitely freed things up. But it's also part of the baby boomers' entire zeitgeist that they've just always been more hard-charging when it comes to redefining the parameters of personal relationships and reinventing the different stages of their life cycle and, wanting to stay youthful, wanting to stay titillated and, trying new stuff, right into being the cutting edge of the divorce. They were the beginning of the divorce revolution. And nowadays, baby boomers are getting divorced more than any other quadrant of society, which is bizarre when you think about it. A lot of baby boomers are 55, 65, 70 years old. And, you would think that if somebody had been married for 20 years and was, 65 years old, that it would be a benchmark for ongoing stability. But instead, the boomers are actually the only group that have seen their divorce rate surge 50% in the last 20 years, whereas a lot of other age groups, their divorce rate has plateaued for them. So only the boomers keep charging ahead and wanting to have it their way, to quote Burger King or whoever. It's crazy
okay.
to watch.
Yes, and you and I a number of times have talked about the gray divorce, both in Hawaii and when I was on the radio there, and now here with Progressive Radio Network. The gray divorce, people that have been married 40 years are getting a divorce, and that surprises probably especially family members.
Oh, totally. I mean, it really shakes things up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a divorce lawyer, not an estate planning lawyer, but, watch what happens when, dad divorces mom, marries his secretary who's 30 years younger, and starts changing the estate plan to leave everything to wife number two instead of to the kids. That can discombobulate a family pretty quick.
Yes, and why it's so important to have a prenuptial agreement when everybody's happy.
Get them while they're happy.
So,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. But baby boomers are used to having their way, don't you think?
Oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what they've gone ahead every step of the way and redefined everything as they went. Traditional gender roles, the institution of marriage, They push back against all the restrictive convention of normal life. That, you know, that's what the baby boomers have always done. You know, they came post-war boom. They had a cakewalk deal, really. They pampered children of a great post-war economy, but then they showed the typical adolescent disrespect for the past, and they pushed against, you know, all their normal conventions of social life that their parents had more or less accepted. I mean, my parents. My dad fought in World War II. He was just happy to be alive at the end of World War II. He came back. He had the requisite couple of kids, a swimming pool in the backyard, a country squire station wagon, and barbecue on Saturday night. That was the deal. Listen to some Chubby Checker records if he was really daring. they didn't want to reinvent the whole world. They just, they wanted to rest on their laurels of an emerging America that had, that they'd helped to save from, world domination. So it was, they had a much different viewpoint. And then the next generation, every generation, succeeding generation, tends to rebel against the prior one. That's a given throughout history.
Just to interrupt a little bit, the World War II vets, including your father, were welcomed back into the United States and treated as heroes, which helped their self-esteem as they burrowed into their new life. And they probably had, your father probably had a real appreciation for the good life after being in World War II. He must have been very grateful.
Well, and they, then the country was grateful. I mean, they had the GI Bill; they could go to college for cheap. We had after World War II, America was the only big dog left standing on the block. So we had the world's, 50-60% of the whole world's economy was us, and we were riding high. So that was a whole different zeitgeist, and then my generation came along and took advantage of all that. Spent like crazy. We were a bunch of spoiled brats, really, in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. We talked about how we were going to change the world and all go join communes and not save the planet and do all this good stuff. Instead, we wound up being the biggest shopping generation of all time. And meanwhile, the poor millennials then got handed, the 2008 recession and a few other things that really knocked them backwards. Whereas we had all the lucky breaks, and a lot of millennials kind of resent the boomers for it.
I know. That's very true. I have some of them as clients, and you point out that the millennials are having less sex, and they're challenging monogamy. We're going to talk about all of these things. They're having more hookups. Of course, the internet and porn and all of that has great influence. I don't think we're quite finished talking about boomers, though, before we move on to millennials. I'm looking at what you sent me for the outline. And
Well, I can dig into it. I mean, it's shocking.
Yeah.
25% of all recent divorces involve people who have been married for over two decades.
Yes.
That
is amazing for a lot of people.
In the last 20 years. It's crazy.
Yes. And then you cite an AARP survey that most boomers, 71%, say sex is still important in their lives, and only slightly more than half, 54%, are satisfied with their sex lives.
You think about Viagra and stuff like that. I mean, it's one thing to want sex. It's another thing to be able to achieve it. And all of a sudden you got Viagra and all these scientific breakthroughs, which allows them to continue to act like they're still teenagers in their 70s, which is, kind of amusing, but kind of crazy.
There's a misconception that I want to put out there, because men need to know that the ED drugs, Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, there's a new one that starts with an S, Dendra, I think it is, they will not increase your desire. They are not aphrodisiacs. They will get the penis to be erect. The inside of the penis has a lot of erectile tissue and nitric oxide, and when that goes down in some, in many older men, it needs it back, and that's one of the things that's inside Viagra to help stimulate the nitric oxide. But it's not, and honestly, I have clients who come in, they've been given Viagra or Cialis or whatever, and their doctors fail to tell them they need to take this on a relatively empty stomach, because then it gets into the bloodstream faster. And they fail to tell them that they may still need a little stimulation from their partner. And they may have to like their partner, too. So oral or manual stimulation. But some men who are not adequately educated about this think that it's a magic pill, that everything will just be glorious.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, they think that just the world's going to be their oyster as soon as they take this pill. You still got to have an attractive lady who knows what to do with it, and you know, then once it gets going, it's a big help. But I think there's a lot of misconception about Viagra and Cialis. And I've heard that a lot of people feel that they don't need to take as much of it as the whole pill. I mean, breaking it in half seems to work pretty good too.
Well, that's right. And then I see some younger men who definitely have performance anxiety, and they've been checked out by the urologist, and they don't have anything physiologically wrong. So we talk about the performance anxiety and breathing more and being relaxed and having a massage from your partner and maybe giving her a massage as well. All these things you can do to improve any sexual interaction. But and a lot of older men are grateful that they can have an ED pill. But the rest of it has to be in place, too, to make it a really good experience.
Yeah, it's interesting how this sort of better living through chemistry has almost bookended the baby boomer generation. I mean, the boomers would have never kicked off the sexual revolution without the introduction of the birth control in the early to mid-60s. And now, all of a sudden, in the 2000s, you get the introduction of Viagra. So they got the go ahead when they were younger to go ahead and have sex. And then, as it would have normally started to fade, they've got a whole second wind to go ahead and keep having sex. So I can see why the millennials are upset with the boomers.
Yes, they're a lot, and then also. Oh, there's other stuff outside of the realm that we're going to talk about, but like climate change and all of that. So,
yeah. Having destroyed the planet and the economy, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, so. However, if they're grateful, they'll say, well, thank you, though, for giving us life.
Yeah, that's true, too. That is kind of a precious gift.
Yeah, it is. So you say, nowadays, couples have higher expectations for their relationships than in previous generations. I absolutely agree with you. I see it all the time in my clients. And then you also point out, you take it over here, Brad, that about reaching 65, and then what happens in terms of expectations?
Well, just an expanded lifespan. I mean, it used to be, again, not all that long ago, that people got to their mid-60s and they were dropping dead. Now they've got, because people reach 65, they've got a likelihood of another 20 years ahead to 85, and with longer life expectancies, not to mention the internet's exponentially increasing number of available linkages, you've got potential for more new partners out there at any age. And there's a clever term for that author Stephanie Koontz has devised. She refers to it as a, quote, thicker remarriage market, quote, which is really true. If you're sick of your spouse at age 65, you go online and find a new one. I mean, it used to be if you were 65, you didn't have the time or the energy or the availability. I mean, back in the days when you actually had to meet people live and in person, there was only so much chance that you were likely to find anybody better than whatever you had sitting at home. Now,
it's true enough.
Especially,
and then
especially
too, a lot of senior
crazy dating sites and porn sites and all this. Oh my God! Everybody's expectations are just going through the roof, rightly or wrongly.
And there are sites specifically for people over 50, designated for them.
There's plenty. There's sites for married people that want to fool around. I mean, there's a site for everything.
I know, for everything. But, I mean, when you're over 50, you're less likely to want to go to bars and meet people as you might have been when you were in your 20s or 30s. So we have many
true.
More choices. Now, for the millennials, and maybe this is a good way to segue into millennials, although we've touched on millennials already, but for millennials, they're having less sex, and their relationships are often compromised by all the smartphones and hookup sex and porn, and there are lots of things that derail millennials in terms of having a healthy, well-balanced life. And it's really too bad.
You would think, you know, watching all the stuff that's going on and, you know, on the millennials on TV and on their phones all the time and seemingly having all this fun, you know, you would think that would lap over to a more active sexual life as well. But apparently today's millennials are significantly less likely to report having a regular sexual partner. Maybe 77% versus, you know, boomers had 85%. They more likely to report having sex casually because they're, you know, they are famous for their hookups. But casual sex isn't as satisfying as regular sexual partners and may almost, you know, be spooky. I mean, you were talking about what it takes for a man to get an erection, for example. I mean, if a man's been with a woman who knows his body and she can help him get an erection, that helps. If he's with somebody that laughs the first time she sees him naked, or you know, she doesn't, you know, she just lies there or doesn't, you know, there's no experience level, there's no skill set. You know, then you're more likely to have to have performance anxiety and have insufficient erection situation. So it actually can degenerate your sexuality to not have enough practice, enough partners, enough experience. Then the next thing you know, you're less likely to try it the next time, and the next thing you know, you're less likely to try and ask a girl out because, you know, you couldn't get it up the last time you were with her or whatever. I mean, it's, you know, this has some diminishing returns.
It becomes a really negative cycle.
Spiral, yeah.
And, yeah, spiral down. You talked about, prior to this, about the new monogamy for millennials. And
right.
Could you expand on that? Because I also have some feelings about and some comments about being monogamish.
Well, this isn't something that I invented, but sociologists have come up with this term for new monogamy, sort of almost a type of polyamory, where you know you have one sort of long-standing, dependable relationship, but an open willingness to acknowledge that maybe that's not going to, you know, meet everybody's needs for all time, and more specifically, that maybe going outside of even your monogamish relationship for sex doesn't necessarily entail forfeiting your relationship. And that, I think, is becoming a standard analysis for some of what the millennials are doing.
There's another problem, and I've had this in my practice. When a couple, oftentimes having a discussion about all of this can deepen the intimacy for a couple because they're being honest. They're saying, well, I've had some fantasies about maybe are having a threesome or whatever they're fantasizing about, but going outside of the primary relationship. There are usually consequences, like there can be enduring resentment and or even falling in love with someone else in this process. And so the couple needs to have a really important discussion about this, and sometimes it is facilitated by having a therapist present. I help them mediate, for example. When a threesome or opening of the relationship of the marriage fails, it tends to be when one person is the driver and the other person is pressured to agree. So if the decision is made out of anger or resentment, shocker, it tends not to work either.
Yeah, well, so. I can certainly understand that. It seems that what's happening is that although the millennials are less likely to have a regular sexual partner, they're more likely to be having sex casualty with friends or random partners. So what they seem to be doing is having maybe less sex overall, less relationships, less commitments, and instead, whatever they're doing is more casual, which is that's not totally surprising out of this generation. I mean, you know, the watchword, 20 years ago for these kids was, yeah, whatever. I mean, how many times mm-hmm. did you want to slap your kid for saying, you know, yeah, whatever, when you asked them to take out the trash or whatever? Yeah, whatever. Mm-hmm. No, how about mm-hmm. just take out the trash? So the kind of, whatever, whatever crowd is, it's kind of an interesting way as applied to sex and relationships. It's kind of a cool way of hedging your bets. You know, you're maybe having some physical pleasure while avoiding the emotional risks. But what you were saying is also true. There's, when you get too much of that going on, there's definitely a gender-based drawback where women report having, more sexual satisfaction, in actual relationship sex than hookup sex. I mean, for guys, any old sex will do a lot of the time, but for women, they'd rather it meant something. So it is gender biased.
I'm allowed to use the word.
I think what you were saying was also true. You know, you see all this stuff on porn sites and all this, and why don't you put on this new outfit and we'll try this and let's try this new position, and a lot of times it's a guy wanting a woman to be maybe a little more submissive or a little more hooker-like or a little more whatever, the women, maybe if they go along at all, they may be going along pretty reluctantly, and it may actually kind of, cheapen the relationship unless they're both equally into it, is I think what you were trying to say.
Yes, and sometimes couples can watch porn together if they're both, if they have good communication, and especially if they watch porn that's more female-centric, where the woman is being given pleasure, and
right.
and especially cunnilingus. And you had an interesting point about that with millennials, that...
About cunnilingus?
Yeah, that cunnilingus is one of the surest ways, well, you said this, and I know it to be true personally and clinically, one of the surest ways for a woman to have an orgasm. But what were the statistics on that, Brad?
I've got it right here, as luck would have it. Single millennials were 66% less likely than members of older generations to enjoy receiving oral sex. So I can back up on this, but let me finish this thought. 66% less likely than members of older generations to enjoy receiving oral sex, which does not bode particularly well for the female pleasure, since amongst partnered sex acts, cunnilingus is one of the surest ways for women to have an orgasm. And that was, you were bearing that out based on your own personal experience, it sounded like.
Absolutely. But I will say this, and also given the times that I was in my 20s, I had to sort of, a lot of men back then didn't go right for eating pussy. I can say colloquial stuff here on this air.
They did not, you said?
They did not in those days. They were
right.
Not very good at cunnilingus, is my experience. And I, you know, it's just, I really believe that men who truly enjoy going down on a woman are more evolved, sexually speaking, and they really like women, and they really like to be there when she has an orgasm, and he's licking on her clitoris, and he really loves
how
she...
I'll stop you right there, because if that's the case, I'm really evolved, sexually speaking.
I'm not surprised. I don't know that firsthand, but I'm not surprised.
I think as a guy, I think that, you know, there's a tremendous feeling of satisfaction to know that your partner's enjoying it as much as you are, and to bring her to orgasm is kind of part of the deal.
Absolutely.
But it's weird. I mean, this whole thing about millennials, it's very interesting. Apparently, millennials are just more inhibited in general about the physical body. Apparently, they don't really like to get naked. Folks nowadays want their own changing rooms, their own bathrooms. Even as a couple, everybody wants to sort of have their own privacy and not be walking around naked in front of even their own partner. So you've got these digitally nonchalant millennials who seem so sexy, an allusion to their sexting and their, you know, all their back and forth on their phones, but they may actually be quite prudish in person.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it's been shown that millennials require privacy. Fitness facilities across the country are said to be renovating locker rooms in response to the demand of their younger clients. This new discomfort with nudity might stem from the fact that, I hadn't even thought of this, that by the mid-1990s, most high schools had stopped requiring students to shower after gym class. I mean, when I was growing up, everybody just hopped in the showers and we were all naked for everybody, and you kind of grew up that way.
Mm-hmm.
But now, apparently, everybody's worried about their positive body image or having negative body images. While positive body image is linked to having better sex, which is better linked to making you happier. So in a weird way, some of this cutesy stuff that the millennials may be doing may actually be backfiring.
Of course. You know, being comfortable in your body, not being worried about how your breasts look when you're on top, for example, during sexual play, not being worried about your chubby size, accepting your body as a unique body, maybe not perfect, probably not perfect, what body is, but unique, and if it works really well, and you can then let go. Letting go in sex is what is most likely to bring on orgasms, and I'm saying with a plural, orgasms, multiple orgasms. It's about letting go, being in the moment.
You're getting greedy now, huh?
Huh?
You're getting greedy now. You want multiple orgasms.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's how I roll.
I agree.
But
and
it is about
I'm happy
letting
to hear you say that, because if there's one thing that's ever traumatized me when I'm having sex, it's worrying about how my breasts look when I'm on top.
Well, you can just dispense with that worry, I think.
That's a load off my mind. Yeah. No, but it is, all kidding aside, it is
yeah,
kind of weird to think that, these people really are just, they're not that comfortable with their own bodies, despite watching probably more naked bodies on their phones in an afternoon than you and I have, seen in our lifetimes. I mean, it's kind of a weird kind of, flip side scenario.
Yeah, but I think a lot of these, I'm stereotyping here, but I actually see them in my practice a fair amount. Software engineers who don't really have many social skills and are not dating and watch a lot of porn and masturbate. Some of them don't realize that porn is really bad sex education and that these bodies, this is fantasy sex.
That's a good way of putting it. It's bad sex education.
Yeah, and it's fantasy sex, you know, and the guy, the porn actors, the males, are picked for their giant cocks. And certainly not for their acting ability, as I've observed. And women often, it's changing a little bit, but they often have enhanced breasts with implants. And anyway, it's fantasy. And so it's not good sex education. And if a man only knows watching porn and masturbating, then without that, and maybe finally has a real partner, it can be a problem because he doesn't have the right stimulation. His own hand, which knows exactly how much he needs to press and so on, and then the exotic performances from pornography, and he doesn't have that. And so some of these guys, I have them in my practice, then they can't ejaculate. They are what's called inhibited ejaculators. They cannot ejaculate in their partner's vagina, or they can't.
Really?
Or they premature ejaculate.
Oh.
Yeah, it does affect, you know, real time sexuality. And
that's interesting. I had not really thought that through. I'd heard interesting sort of anecdotal stuff about how that one of the fastest growing areas for setting up prostitution style operations was Silicon Valley, because these tech geeks had really not had any real life experience, and that it was that they were easy prey for professional women, because these guys,
yes,
didn't know how to do anything else. But I never really,
yes,
thought it through all the way about, you know, the way you're describing it.
Yes. Well, you know, and there have actually been some studies that indicated it's very possible that the young man doing this, you know, in his 20s, early 30s, that his brain may actually change a bit. And then that may contribute to his erectile dysfunction. So it's another show. It's another topic. But there, you know, I've been doing the work that I'm doing as a marriage and family therapist and as a board-certified sex therapist and as a gerontologist working with older people and their sexuality. I've been doing this for 38 years, and I have seen so much change. You know, when Viagra was approved in April of 1998, I was in Hawaii, and I got a urologist and Eddie Sherman. Remember Eddie Sherman?
Yeah.
So he was a three-dot
columnist. Yes.
And he's passed on now, but got him and this urologist to come on, and Eddie, who'd had diabetes, he said, yeah, I took it, and I liked it, and my wife liked it. And that was like in May of 1998 on the Hawaii radio waves. But then what followed, I'm just telling you my perspective and all the changes I've seen. What followed were a whole bunch of Viagra divorces, so-called.
Yeah, I've heard of that,
too. The wife who'd been ignored for years, all of a sudden now her husband can get it up, and he wants her, and she's probably postmenopausal and hasn't taken bioidentical hormone replacement therapy, as I have done, and has dried up and is not wanting her husband that way. Because he hasn't been nice to her, so.
Well, not to mention the mechanics of what Viagra does to the actual sex act. I mean, it's always, we've talked about this on your show for years about, you know, how women oftentimes prefer foreplay to the actual sex act. At the very least, they want, you know, I've heard statistics say, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of foreplay before they're really going to be ready to orgasm. And meanwhile, you've got a man with an instantly erect penis and, you know, looking to stick it somewhere and skimping on the foreplay. And it really kind of screws up, the entire process of screwing.
Well, that's right, because what's being left out is all of the emotional foreplay and talking to each other. And that's where the digital world screws up stuff even more. I want to tell the listeners, you and the listeners, about a study from the University of Essex in England. So these researchers assigned pairs of strangers to discuss either casual or meaningful events. The presence of a smartphone, even outside the visual field, derailed the formation of relationships, especially if the participants were asked to talk about something personally significant. So smartphones inhibited the development of interpersonal closeness and
you
trust.
What do you mean the presence of the... You mean just the fact that people use them so much, or just that they're...
That they're there, even if they're not in the visual field. They could be on a table nearby, but it's there, and they're aware of it. And these researchers said that smartphones inhibited the development of interpersonal closeness and trust and reduced the extent to which individuals felt understanding and empathy from their partners. You know, love works in the lulls, in the unstructured moments of just being together. And these are the times when a lot of people are just turning to their devices instead of doing something romantic, like look into your partner's eyes and slow down and hold hands and kiss and do all those delicious things.
We've all seen, you know, couples going out to dinner and spending the whole time on each of their own individual phones and hardly communicating at all. And I was at a dinner party in New York a couple months ago where there must have been, I don't know, 10 or 15 young kids all sitting at a big table, and, you know, you would think it would be all kinds of interaction, and every single one of them was using their phone rather than talking to anybody else. It was bizarre.
Bizarre and sad. And you have a couple of quotes in your outline about hookups and about millennials, and let's see if we can find it. Oh, we hook up because we have no social skills. We have no social skills because we hook up. That's too bad.
That's a great quote to describe the millennials. If what you're saying is accurate, we're in for a real sleigh ride, because it appears that the constantly connected millennials are going to contribute significantly to the incredible boom in online porn, which is expected to grow by almost 50% in the next 5 years. They say that the average smartphone user will view an average of 348 porn videos this year. So that's like
isn't that amazing? That is just amazing. Do you remember in your youth how difficult it was to find porn to watch?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was excited by Playboy magazine. Just getting a hold of my dad's Playboy centerfolds was enough for me.
You're right. I remember being at a party in the 60s. My first job out of college was in Hawaii, and it was in the late 60s. And it was on the other side of Oahu. I don't remember where, but it was a party. And in one of the bedrooms, somebody had set up a projector, and they were projecting porn films. And the men, I swear to you, were wearing black socks and otherwise naked. Do you remember any of those?
Now we're talking. That's a fashion statement, yeah.
Fashion statement.
No, that's pretty funny. That is pretty funny.
Yeah. So it's come. It's hard
to figure where it all goes from here. I mean, you know, the millennials have had a hard time. You know, the other problem is that they just got, you know, they've got whacked by the economy. So they've, you know, I've got some statistics here about how they've got 20% of the 18 to 34-year-olds responded to a Pew survey saying they'd postpone marriage. 22% had put off having a baby. They suffered a 68% in real net worth from 1984 to 2009. My God, I mean, you know, they've gotten hammered. So you've got a sociological change where America's economy which basically thrives on what's called household formation, which is economists speak for, you know, the milestones of life, marrying, having kids, buying a home. But many of these young millennials, you know, they put all those modern rites of passage on hold. So we've got an interesting situation where a whole generation is, you know, the birth rate in America has dropped below sustainability levels for the first time. You know, only about 20% of adults ages 18 to 29 are married, compared to like 60% in 1960. The median age for first marriages has risen by about 6 years for both men and women. So you're really in a situation where millennials are, you know, I mean, I don't even know how you would go about romancing a woman if what you were doing was trying to bring her back to, you know, your single bed in your parents' basement, which is, you know, a third of the millennials have lived at home at one point or another because of economics. And they have been handed a bad break, that's for sure.
I agree. But there are those that persevere and rise above. But they're usually, let's face it, the ones with perhaps more education and those that are more sort of balanced emotionally balanced. But there are a whole bunch that aren't, and I see them in my practice, and I often help them. You write that the internet can educate, titillate, and ultimately connect them to with others willing to engage in whatever sexual preference suits them. I think that's right. They have so many choices.
In theory, it's right that they should.
Yes.
They should be having, you know, more sex, more willingness, more experiences, more everything, because they've got access to so much more of it. But what's really happening is that the number of millennials who are even having sex appears to have shrunk. I quote an article from The Week magazine entitled Sex, Why Millennials Are Having Less. Turns out that millennials are more than twice as likely to be sexually inactive in their early 20s as were the baby boomers. And that only 59% of millennials had sex in the last year, down from 65% for the boomers. So go figure. It really is, it's astounding. I mean, theoretically, it's all out in front of all these people to engage in all this stuff. But either because they're afraid to be naked in the shower, or because they, you know, because they're, you know, they're expecting their, you know, their girlfriend to be able to emulate acts that they see of strippers do on their smartphones or trained sex, you know, people or whatever. You know, it's for whatever reason, you know, they're backing away from it. And then I read an article today about how that because of internet hookups, largely because of internet hookups, STDs are at the highest level in years. Apparently, when they are hooking up, they're doing it because everything's so random and because you haven't got a regular partner as often. You know, now you've got a vast increase in STDs in the last couple of decades. But really, just the last few years is actually when it's really peaked.
Yes. Well, it's not surprising. With hookups, you don't really know the person. And some of these folks are not having the discussion, the talk. Have you been tested? Are we going to be faithful about using condoms? I mean, if you're going to get, the way I have always thought is, if you're going to get naked with somebody and be so vulnerable and let this person into your body, if you're a woman and if you're a man, you want to fuck her hard, and if you're going to do all of that, you need to have the discussion beforehand about STDs and what your status is in terms of HIV.
Might be nice to at least know something about them if you're going to have sex with them. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and all the people that wake up the next morning, they've been in blackout, and they don't even remember the partner's name. So that, and then we have sexual assault. I mean, this is a very big area. Sexual assault on college campuses is a huge problem. And the Me Too movement, of course, has brought out a lot of stuff. And then in France right now, they're protesting sexual violence against women in France. Big problem. You know, the French are known to be so liberated and sexy and
laissez-faire, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's the French word. Mm-hmm. Laissez-faire. Well, don't we live in a different time? And it's fascinating. And I bet you don't want to retire. I don't want to.
No, it's
keep in the
exciting.
Midst of it.
I certainly am going to continue to do the sociological research. That to me is a lot more fun than just getting people divorced, which is, you know, my bread and butter. But it is fascinating to watch the changes, and in particular, it's really interesting to watch people getting divorced so late in life. That has proved to be a real surprise.
Yeah, it is, and. I have seen over the years my fair share of couples over 50 contemplating this. And, they say that there's a four-letter word that would make so many relationships so much better. And it's not F-U-C-K, it's T-A-L-K. So many couples just need to talk more, communicate more. I feel like so many couples, their relationships die from emotional undernourishment. They don't know how to say, oh, I really appreciate you for this, or I love you for this. And then you specifically say what you love them for. And it can be small things, because small baby steps all add up. Behavioral therapy, you do positive baby steps, and then lo and behold, down the line, the attitude starts to shift.
Well, I think I think what you're talking about is really, really, it seems so obvious, but it's so true that what you really want is reality in your relationships. And I think maybe one of the things when people, especially these younger people, and I don't want to sound like an old fogey here, but when people start getting so addicted to overstimulation, it becomes a distraction from more real relationships, and it turns into something that's more focused on the virtual than the real. And I see this when you see these kids talking about all kinds of silly stuff about what new tattoo, what pop singer has got or something. It's weird. When you find yourself getting into conversations about stuff that has nothing to do with your own real life and is instead focused on whatever's the latest thing that came across your phone, virtual reality starts to trump real reality. I know you can't use the word Trump anymore, but it pops real reality all of a sudden because that starts to be the new thing that starts to happen. And people start losing some of their basic standards of decorum that long-term real relationships have always required, and you wonder when you see stuff like the latest thing now is for these kids, and I shouldn't call them kids, that really sounds condescending, these people that are in, totally dating, they're meeting their mates on their phones, either through the dating sites or whatever. I mean, by far and away, that's turned into the fastest and most frequent way of people to meet. It's actually, it's also generated the most marriages. I mean, I find far more couples when I'm dealing with couples nowadays and I ask them how they met, by far more of them have met online than met in a social situation the way we all used to in real time and real space. So,
yeah, but I find that true in my...
The good news is it makes meeting easier, but it also makes departing easier and sometimes in pretty antisocial ways. I mean, I don't know if you've heard about this new approach that a lot of these people use called ghosting, where, you start a relationship on your cell phone and rather than, ever having a face-to-face talk about, hey, maybe we should break up and see other people or do whatever, I mean, at least somewhat, sympathetic and polite discussion, even if it's a difficult discussion, at least you used to have it in person. Now they just ghost one another. Okay, I used to send you 10 texts a day. Now I don't talk to you at all. I don't answer your phone calls, and I don't respond to any of your texts. So, whoa, okay, well, I guess we're not together anymore. But you know, is that really the behavior you want to train everybody to exhibit? It's just bizarre.
Well, it can be very hurtful, and it's really not good manners. You said you were losing decorum, but it's you know, we were raised. Well, I was raised that you need to be polite and really consider the other person's feelings. So if you're ghosting, you're not doing that. You're just looking for an easy way out. But see, that's part of the problem. If you don't have social skills, then most of your relationship has been digital, maybe with a hookup in between. I'm stereotyping a little bit. I'm generalizing. But if you've had this sort of relationship, the easiest way, the most comfortable way to get out is to ghost.
Well, it's like you were saying earlier about even the presence of a smartphone makes it difficult for people to have serious conversations. I mean, you know, social media does enable the avoidance of difficult conversations. As people have gotten less and less comfortable talking face-to-face about hard things, it becomes easier to break up, you know. In even the most classless ways. And the quote you talked about earlier is exactly right. We hook up for the millennials. We hook up because we have no social skills. We have no social skills because we hook up. And then we hang up. I mean, you know, that's essentially what ghosting is. I mean, in our day and age, and again, I don't want to sound like any more of an old fogey than I probably already do, but I mean, that was the most egregious social faux pas you could do would be to hang up the phone on somebody. I mean, you know, right. That was like the most classless thing you could ever do is, okay, this conversation's over, I'm hanging up. I mean, how freaking rude. And yet, what is ghosting but modern-day hanging up?
It's true.
Yeah.
And it leaves so many questions for the person that's the victim of it. And I've had women come to my practice, and they're heartbroken and confused. Okay, there's the music.
And time's up for Heartbreak and Confusion.
Time's up.
Okay.
See you in Hawaii.
Aloha, everybody. See you soon, Diana.
Bye-bye, Brad. Con calibro affascini il tuo cuore. E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore. Ma i tuoi piedi, ta 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 ta. Ma i tuoi piedi, ta 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 ta. Happy feet, da da da, happy feet, da da da, happy.